This is Detective Tom Lang from the Los Angeles Police Department. Your ex-wife, Nicole Simpson, has been killed.
I'm so sorry, Mr. Simpson.
Something big's happening here.
We're taking him to trial.
Hey, we're live. Tony Jones, Ryan Parker, killer serial. People versus OJ, episode 6, titled...
Marsha.
That was kind of clever. I kind of thought there, when I saw the title, I kind of thought, I wonder if they're like going to throw a little Brady Bunch, like there'll be the Brady Bunch playing on the TV in the background of one of the scenes or something, but
yeah,
no such luck.
The poor kids are watching when she's not at home because she's working 70 hours a week.
Let's wait. We're going to get to that, dude. I had all sorts of like divorce court PTSD watching last night's or watching this week's episode. Bro. John Travolta is taking a lot of crap online for his acting in this.
Really? Yeah. What are you seeing?
People think he's overacting and he's basically making Shapiro into a character, that kind of thing.
I mean, in my opinion, he's been consistent throughout. I mean, that's who he established in episode one. And I don't think that he's deviated from that. It's been interesting to see how that character has really taken a back seat. I think it's to the director's credit because they could have twisted this, you know, I mean, because it's Travolta, because he is playing this larger than life character or playing this character kind of in a larger than life way.
Yeah.
But they've really downplayed him ever since maybe the second episode.
Do you think John Travolta is a great actor or a terrible actor? It doesn't seem reasonable to say he's a mediocre, like he's Nicolas Cage. Sometimes he's great, most times he's mediocre. He takes him like that Scientology movie he did, you know, that
Battlefield Earth.
Yeah, like he's done some crap and you just wonder like you look at him in the Tarantino films and you think, is he really a great actor? Or is he just like Tarantino just knew how to take his stiffness? Because he's so stiff. And just be like, I'm going to actually build this movie around his stiffness.
I think when he's delivered good performances, it's because he's been given great content to work with. Mm. Right? That like anybody could have pulled that off. I would not put him in any sort of pantheon or top 25 of – you know, greatest actors of all time.
Yeah.
He hasn't been, if there's any sort of overacting or if people, you know, to get caught up in him doing a bad job is to miss how great virtually every other aspect of the series is, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't think he's doing a bad job. I think, I don't know that I would agree with those comments.
It's funny. Now Kardashian's character, played by David Schwimmer, he was in most of the episode. He never says a word.
Nope. And although he gives a firm nod when somebody says the juice.
Yeah,
you know,
isn't it OJ says, "I'm the juice."
I'm the juice. And you just see Kardashian just like, yes, you know.
Yeah, like that's what he's been waiting for. OJ really lays into his defense team there. It seems like it's interesting because Shapiro then turns around at the as they have all. First of all, Cochran is completely unflustered. Like it's almost like Cochran could be defending anybody. It doesn't matter to him that it's OJ. That's immaterial to him. Who he's defending. That's one interesting thing.
And he's doing law.
Yeah, he's just doing right. Exactly. So he can, and even in that scene when they're in the jail conference room, the other attorneys are all sitting around a table. OJ is like stalking around the table, pounding on the table, and Johnny is sitting at a chair by the wall over by the door, like disengaged. Like, I have to be here, but I don't give a crap what OJ says about this. Like, OJ doesn't know anything about this.
Doesn't know anything. And nobody else in his mind knows as much as he does. So I have, like I've mentioned before, all my friends are lawyers. And so, you know, one of them told me once, you know, when you get out of law school, you don't know, I want to paraphrase this correctly. You're not concerned with the pursuit of justice, right? You're not taught that at all. You're taught how to do law, how to practice law. right?
Yeah.
And I, you know, I don't watch a lot of legal dramas because I find them boring and repetitive, but this is different.
Yeah.
And I think you see very clearly, and certainly over the last two episodes, that distinction, right? Nobody's out for justice, right? They're doing law. Marcia Clark may be out for justice, you know, but then that brings in a whole another discussion about what would justice be in the situation and all that. But certainly with Cochran, he's doing law and right now doing it better than his peers in the show.
Yeah, it is interesting because he's so unruffled. Like, they put that housekeeper on the stand and she's just a complete disaster for the defense team.
But he's like, okay, well, we'll move on.
Yeah, he was totally unflustered by it.
Yeah,
and then
it's great.
He, like, I don't know. It's just it's fascinating to watch that. But then he does get a little flustered when a reporter asks him about his own history of domestic violence.
Yeah,
and you think, oh baby.
And then he calls and buys her off.
Although they leave us hanging, we don't know if she accepts that offer or not.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see next episode.
See how
they resolve that if they do.
Let's switch from the defense team to the prosecutors.
Well, this, you know, we've talked all along about the major themes that have come up in the show and how it just feels like every new episode adds another layer to it. And this one did with when we're looking at the prosecution and the treatment of Marcia Clark. So now you bring in gender into this world. So we've had what, celebrity, you know, we always try to touch a little bit on spirituality and that kind of component to the characters. You've had race, obviously, the criminal justice system, and then
Los
now
Angeles.
Gender.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Los Angeles as a character, sure. And now, which is, you know, part of this gender issue.
No doubt.
LA, to be a woman in LA is completely different than being a woman in Minneapolis. Right?
For sure. And yeah, the way that she's written up in the tabloids and people are commenting on her hair, like, she's so proud of her new hairdo. Because here's the thing, you look at pictures and later she's going to straighten her hair. She's going to get rid of the curls. By the end of the trial, she has straight hair.
Next episode, I think, maybe.
Is that right? So she goes in there and I'm thinking this is where she gets her hair straightened.
Yeah.
And all she did was like get a tighter perm.
Working that perm, man.
And she walks in and she's just destroyed. And then like the picture of her naked released by her first former husband.
Yeah.
That Gil Garcetti doesn't even know about. I'm like, at a certain point you want to be like, why is Gil Garcetti not prosecuting this case? It's like, does the district attorney of Los Angeles, all he does, he's just a bureaucrat. He just assigns other people to do the work. Like, when does he go into the courtroom and prosecute the case? I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't know.
He like lays it all on her and he says, I can get you an image consultant.
Oh, God, that was painful. He's like apologizing. And he apologizes first. He's like, this is uncalled for.
But. Yeah. Yeah. And then like he's kind of saying it as he walks away. I thought that scene was brilliantly acted. Like, that seems so much like exactly how it actually would have gone down.
So it'd be interesting to know if how – you know, you've got to write a show, right? And you've got to, this book has been adapted, you know, the run of his life has been adapted into this series. And you have to create the episodes the way that you have to create them for the narrative arc and the structure of television. But I found it extremely interesting that episode releases, was it on International Women's Day? Or like the day after?
Yeah, that's right. That's,
you know, so it's perfect timing. And these issues that she brings up in the show from the stand. And this is the episode that made me want to go fact check the most to see if there were those scenes where she broke down about her family, you know, and they had to go to recess because she needed to get home to her kids, you know.
Yeah.
But it's raising all these issues that were there in the 90s. And I think probably for most women are alive and well today, that pressure of balancing family and work that we as guys just don't know. Because that expectation's generally not there.
Yeah, it's very poignant, that part of when she reprimands Johnny Cochran on the bench.
Yeah.
And you know, how dare you, basically. But here's the other thing, like when her ex-husband outs her on the media later in the episode.
That was brutal.
It's actually true. Like, she got the judge to recess the court that day because she had to go home and take care of her kids. And then she didn't go home and take care of her kids.
Yeah.
She let Gil Garcetti guilt her into staying and working with the team rather than working at home. You know, so it's a little bit like she brought that on herself too, you know?
Yeah. Well, there's a thing. I just did a quick check on the phone here that the Hollywood Reporter has been running these fact check, you know, articles a little bit, you know, how accurate is each episode.
Yeah.
And one of the lead reporters said what they were most impressed with the actual Marcia Clark was how strong she seemed to be in the courtroom, that this reporter who covered it most closely never saw her cry in the courtroom.
Oh, yeah.
So.
And you wonder if she cried in her office, and you wonder if she and Chris Darden danced, you know, it was very.
Again, we said this from the first, that we're looking at a TV show, not a documentary.
That's right. No, I get it. So
And all those notes hit. It's great drama.
The notes hit for sure. You know, let's talk about Lance Ito a little bit, because I so want to know what's going on inside his mind, but they have not made – he's a peripheral character, but he's so important. So you get a little sense when she's across the street in divorce court and the family court judge says, you know, Miss Clark, I'm not Lance Ito. Like,
yeah. Well, what does that mean?
Yeah, like you don't get to act, you don't get to over dramatize this situation here with me. Like,
yeah,
you're not gonna, you know,
he's not gonna buy it.
Because Lance Ito got picked for the OJ trial, supposedly because he was so professional and unswayable and wasn't politically connected, so that couldn't be held against him or anything like that. But now he sits back. He's so, you know, and you remember that. I one thing I really like is when they do the cutaways and they'll show people watching it in a bar.
Oh, yeah.
And you'll see in the background, and you like, that's when my memory gets triggered to like watching it on court TV or whatever. And those, because then you've only got the stationary in court camera angles.
Yeah.
You know, and they're like always coming down.
Iconic.
So iconic, right? And so you see Lance Ito sitting, leaning way back in the,
like a boss.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, and I think that celebrity constructed nature of the trial, it's kind of doubly constructed, right? You have the participants who are constructing narratives and quote unquote trying to tell better stories, and Marcia Clark being constructed, you know, what does she wear? What does her hair look like? And then of course you have it, all of that mediated into a TV show. And in fact, I didn't get the exact, I should have written down the exact line, but in one of those scenes that you talk about where they cut away to residents of LA watching on television, one of them says, I hope they bring that character back.
That's right. That's right.
Like, you remember that? And I was like, holy crap. This is smart commentary on the way we engage this stuff.
Right, and even the little vignettes of like TV executives being like, "Call, get Brokaw on the phone. We're doing a one-hour special tonight.
We're going to preempt this." And then you see that's the seeds of all this other stuff that it just is 24/7 now.
Or, okay, so the you know, three-quarters of the way through the episode, it's all about gender, and I think, oh, this whole episode is about gender. And then it just pivots, and it's about race with the N-word. And again, yeah, another one of those kind of meta LA Hollywood moments is people are watching it and then they turn to each other like, can they even say that on TV? Like, yeah, they just watched it being said on TV.
Yeah.
As though the people in the courtroom are like, are under George Carlin's like seven nasty words you can say.
Seven. Yeah.
Like, it's a courtroom. They don't operate by the same rules. Can they say that on TV? Like, they're not on TV, they're in a courtroom.
What was on your what was your interpretation of that scene? Is F. Lee Bailey drunk when he's prosecuting?
He's drunk. He's washed up, and he knows this is his last chance. He what's the first thing he takes? A swing and a miss at. What's the first thing he takes a swing and a miss at? And then Johnny, and he keeps drinking water out of that cup. We think it's water, but you know, it's just shown him.
Yeah, that was on their lunch break. Yeah.
Three shots of bourbon. What do you call this lunch? You know, I call this you know, Mark Furman's tombstone. So he goes after Furman on something and it totally misses, and he sits down, and then Johnny gives him the nod, like, all right, drop the N-word. And he gets up there and drops the N-word.
Yeah.
And, you know, here's what I think about that scene. For one thing, you know, Darden has been saying all along, don't put Furman on the stand. And Marshall Clark's been like, of course we're putting him on the stand. He's a great cop.
Yeah.
When he walks into the courtroom, there's a close-in shot of Marsha Clark's face, and you think, oh, my God, she just had, like, just a flash of doubt when she sees this guy walk into the courtroom.
Yep.
But then she stuffs it down, and he's really is, like, very professional on the stand. Like, he can remember every single thing, every photo that goes up. He's like, here's what we did this, then we did this, here's why we didn't do that.
Yeah.
And then Effie Bailey, the N-word, man. Oh. Yeah. So there's this like meta thing where you're watching, okay, we're watching a show.
Yes.
About a trial that people thought was a show. Yes. So while he says it, then it cuts away. Somebody, these people sitting in a living room say, can they even say that on TV? And I'm thinking to myself, can FX even put that on TV? Like,
Yeah, I mean, that's a
super meta territory, because I can't think as an adult of when I've ever heard that word on television other than being used as the euphemism, the N-word.
Yeah. That's a good point.
So it's like, it's got super meta right there for me. That's how I read that scene.
So on a side note, speaking of this kind of, you know, we're living in the hyper real, right?
Mm-hmm.
What about the news last week of the murder weapon being found at the remains of the O.J. Simpson?
I mean,
ultimately determined not to be the murder weapon, but it's just somebody at FX planted that thing. What do you think?
It's amazing. Even here in Minneapolis, it's you know, in the newspaper 3 days in a row, because first it's slaying, and then it's like the secondary story of how they found it. Two, there's a story about OJ's nervous in jail that it could bungle his parole, which is coming up next week or next month or something. His first chance at parole is right around the corner, and he's worried that this knife is going to bungle it.
So if he gets out, do you think we should have him on the podcast for the last episode?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. I think we can work on that.
Well, it's been great. I agree with you. I think it keeps getting better. It's just so compelling. And, you know, I was like hoping when Mark Furman walks in, I like paused my Roku to see how many minutes were left in the episode. Cause I'm like, please don't make me wait till next week to see Mark Furman on the stand. And then, you know, they do give us some Mark Furman on the stand and they drop the N-word. But, man, this is going to be – I think the next week with him on the stand is just going to be riveting.
Yeah, and then it was funny because we were watching it, and Amy, you know, at the end, Amy was just like, shit. Like, with Marsha, you know, like it's a miracle that she survived.
Well, and also according to Wikipedia, when she wrote the book, without a doubt – she got a $4.2 million advance.
That's all good, man. She's all right. I don't feel so sorry for her anymore.
She landed on her feet.
She landed on her feet, yeah.
She landed on her feet. All right, Killer Cereals, tune in next week for episode 7. It's going to be good.
Later.